Welcome to Adventist Voices Spectrum's podcast. I'm Alexander Carpenter. This is going to be the final recording for 2020. I don't know if you have checked out the Spectrum Journal yet, but editor Bonnie Dwyer describes this year as more beautiful and more terrible. And that's an allusion to the Imani Perry book that Spectrum's Friday book forum group read together and discussed. If you're interested in seeing the recording of that Zoom book club conversation, I recommend you check out the website, or you can see the Facebook Live recording on our Facebook page. One reason this year has been beautiful for me is the connections that I've had with some of you listening to this podcast. Thanks for reaching out. And I always welcome feedback. So if you have ideas for me, feel free to email me at acarpenter@puc.edu. We'll be returning in the middle of January 2021 with a series that I'm calling Living Legends, and they're more extended interviews with folks in our community who have something, I think, to offer us by a deeper exploration of their biography and how they have excelled in leadership and in growing in faith and understanding their spiritual walk over time. So I think that's going to be really interesting, and I'm looking forward to releasing those in the new year. But we're ending with something very good, and that is a film called Soul that I had a chance to screen in advance. It'll be available for you to see around Christmas on the Disney Plus streaming platform, and it's absolutely something that you should watch by yourself in a contemplative mood with some young children or with your philosophy discussion group. I'm serious. This animated film from Pixar is an exploration of consciousness, being and nothingness, the meaning of life and purpose. And yes, we are talking about an animated film. It's about a guy named Joe Gardner, voiced by the actor Jamie Foxx, who is a middle school music teacher. His life's not going really as he hoped. He has always wanted to be in a jazz band. And he's in a little bit of conflict with his mother, who wants him to sort of grow up and be more responsible. I don't want to give too much away, but something happens and he is separated from his body. And this is where the film really becomes profoundly spiritual, as he forms a relationship with another being voiced by Tina Fey, longtime Saturday Night Live writer and the creator of 30 Rock. And I don't want to give any more away about this film, except the other actor or voice actors here include Questlove, Felicia Rashad, David Diggs, and the great Angela Bassett. I got to sit down with the chief creative officer, Pete Docter, at Pixar, who is the director of this film, and his producing partner, Dana Murray. I was joined by folks from Christianity Today, Guidepost Magazine, Relevant Magazine, and we all asked questions about with both to Pete and Dana about the film, and I'm really excited to share all of that, that kind of conversation that we had together with all of you. So we each got to ask a question or two directly to the filmmakers, and I would love to hear from you if you get a chance to watch Soul. Thank you so much for listening, and I genuinely wish you all the best through the holidays and into the new year.
Yes, I knew Sister White.
We will not fear.
The kingdom is alive. The kingdom's on the move with the poor and the meek and the hungry and the lonely.
I'll never forget it.
So we'll begin with Tyler with Relevant Magazine.
Hey, everybody. Congratulations on Soul. It's really good. My question is, when it comes to creating something like the afterlife, can you walk me through some of the edits you had to make? I feel like there'd be a lot of things that would be like, oh, we're close, but we're not quite there, or that works, but it doesn't quite work. I just want to know what that journey, that process was like.
Yeah, the afterlife was especially like danger, danger, danger. You know, there's a lot of pitfalls and things that we could have stuck our foot in by accident. We did start the whole process, I think was one of the first things we did, was talking to a lot of different religious consultants, pastors, theologians, rabbis. We had a couple of people from, who, like shaman even, who came in, and just, we tried to understand from every angle how people across time have understood the soul and what does it look like? Are there any clues to us in terms of the design that we can use? And we actually ended up staying away from the afterlife. There's of course the sort of cliche of like going towards the bright light that we did. And I don't know, Dana, do you remember there was an early script where I actually wrote in the voice of God, which
We were like, probably not a good idea, Pete.
Well, I was thinking like, okay, if we're talking about why live, why am I here? Why am I not getting what I want? It's sort of a Job-like story. And I thought, oh, it'd be fun to have, never refer to him or her. And in fact, every line, I thought this was horribly clever, that every line would be spoken by someone else. So it would be a woman, it'd be a kid, it would be a, you know, all ethnicities and races. Yeah, that was one of the first things to like cut that. And probably good because, you know, the characters like us have to figure things out themselves as opposed to be told.
Great. Next up, Jasmine, please, with Movies and Meaning.
Hi, thanks.
Hi.
So I found it particularly poignant and profound that 22 discovers this readiness to embrace life after she's been walking in Joe's shoes, who's a Black man. So in our current like cultural conversation around race, what do you hope that this conveys to an audience?
Yeah, I mean, we took it on as a huge responsibility to, you know, portray Joe and the rest of the cast, you know, truthful and authentic. And I think that 22 walking in Joe's shoes is like really special because we got to go into these Black spaces like the barber shop, the tailor shop with Joe's mom. And I think the Joe is a universal, he's going through something that's very universal and something I think all of us, if we haven't felt in our life, probably will at some point. And so I think he's a character that so many people can connect to. And culturally, we wanted to make the Black community proud. So we brought on a lot of help. We had a ton of consultants and a culture trust and, you know, our co-director and writer, Kemp Powers, who wish he could be here, is a sick puppy right now. But they were all these voices were such a huge part in making these characters who they were. And so it's very important to us to portray them in a truthful way.
Yeah, in fact, I think our initial concern was about religion. The longer term concern, the bigger one, became more about race and representing culture, because there are a lot of pitfalls and, you know, things that we didn't even know we didn't know. So long learning there.
Thank Paul, you're up next. Paul. Thank you, Jasmine.
So, really liked the movie. One of the things that struck me about it was that it comes at a particularly interesting time in our culture, in a way, just because of the COVID situation, right? Both of the characters are in these holding patterns. One sort of waiting for life to begin, even though he's lived a full life. One is scared to begin life. We're all in kind of that holding pattern right now. Do you feel like Soul is being released at really a good time for just to give viewers a little bit of hope?
I think it sort of turned out that way. I mean, we started it 5 years ago when the world was a different place. But a lot of the things that we're investigating, basically, why are we waking up in the morning? What are we doing with our time? Those, I think, are things that we're maybe asking ourselves more now than we do in normal times. And maybe that's not always good. You know, I think there's some value to asking those questions. That was our hope, really, from the get-go, as Dana and I were like, I hope when this movie is shown, it's not like we ever hoped to answer the question of what is life all about. That's ridiculous to think you could do. But at very least, we hope that we would incite some good conversations and make people go, okay, we got to go get some coffee and talk about this. Or now, sit on Zoom, I guess, and talk about it.
Thank you, Paul. Steve with Screenfish.
Hi there. So I love the film. I thank you so much for chatting with me. I really, really appreciate it.
Cool.
I just had a quick question. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what it means to sort of find your calling and find your place, because this film is so unique in a lot of ways to say other Disney films, which say, just follow your dreams and, you know, and they'll come true. But this one is really sort of grounded in finding your calling. I was wondering if you could speak a little about that.
Yeah, that was one of the great joys that came with this question of, and I think there is a oftentimes a narrative of like, just find what you love and do it and you'll never work a day in your life and that'll lead to happiness and fulfillment. And you're like, yeah, wouldn't that? No, it doesn't work like that. There are times of intense joy, of course, and fulfillment, but it's not the answer to everything. I think it was really exciting as a storyteller, because I think everybody believes so strongly in that narrative that when we don't give Joe the happiness and fulfillment that he's expecting, it's kind of shocking to people. And in fact, I don't know that we really ever pulled this off, Dana, but the hope was that the word spark would be reversed in a way that at the beginning, Joe assumes, like hopefully the audience, that spark is the thing you love that is your passion, music or science or, you know, whatever those specific things. But in the end, spark really means life. You know, that your job is not to just do this one thing, but your job is to live, you know, in all the complexity and nuance that entails. I hope that came across, but that was the intention.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Next up, we have Alexander. Alexander from Spectrum.
First, I loved the Mystics Without Borders line. Brilliant.
Thanks.
Reflecting on the film and after I was thinking about it, I was thinking about, you know, being in nothingness and of course, consciousness, and also thinking about all the problems that adding these kind of deep spiritual questions to an already fraught process of birthing a creative work into the world and finding an audience would add. So what drove you personally to say, this is what I want to make happen?
I guess it's just wanting to reflect reality or my experience of it anyway. And, you know, I think ultimately, the thing I am more realizing lately that, you know, when I started in animation, it was all about the joy that I got out of it. And now I realize that one of the great joys of it is the ability for Dana and I and the rest of our crew to connect with people we will never meet in parts of the world we will never go. You know, through the work that we do, we have this amazing ability to connect people, as well as I think animation has a wonderful ability, I guess filmmaking and storytelling in general, to allow the viewers to step into somebody else's shoes and experience life from a perspective that they have not been in themselves. So those are I think most important things for me, is just representing the world as it sort of seems to me and that I'm struggling with, in hopes that you will see yourself in there as well.
Yeah. Sometimes we don't even know that. Like, I remember after Inside Out, getting letters and stories from people like psychologists who were working with traumatized children. And the only way these children could express themselves is by using the stuffies, like the characters of all the emotions. And that was kind of like crazy to hear, because you don't know how these are going to impact people until really afterwards. Like, while you're making them, you're just so focused and busy doing it that it's not till later sometimes that you can take it in.
Thanks.
Thank you, Alexander. Next up, let's go to Kelly Jane with Crosswalk. Kelly Jane.
Hi, so great to talk to you guys. I have to acknowledge your background and how cool it is, Pete. So my question, for my site, I write mostly to parents when I'm talking about movies. And so something that Disney and Pixar does so wonderfully is in their films, they give something just as important to the parents as they do for the kids. And this movie's so colorful, but it also talks obviously about a lot of really deep philosophical problems and the great before and life's purpose. So my question is, what do you hope that younger kids experience and get out of the film? Or what's one thing that you hope parents are able to kind of converse with their kids about after watching the movie?
I mean, we both have kids. Mine are younger. Pete's are kind of young adults now, but so my kids just saw the film. And I think the conversations that I hope were happening are happening. I think the things that they really connect to are discovering this great before, because it's really interesting. Like, we all like to kind of think about where we came from, where we got our personalities. So that's been a huge topic. And then also the things like their spark, like they're trying to figure out like, well, what are the things that I really love doing and what am I interested in? Clearly, like, I mean, and they've really leaned into the music, which is really cool, the jazz music and the Trent Atticus score as well. But, you know, they're not asking about, you know, the midlife crisis theme that Joe might be having.
Not. Yeah.
So we're definitely having the conversations that I hoped we would be having. But, yeah, so I think kids are really smart and they ask big questions. And so there's a lot in there for them.
Definitely. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly Jane. Next, let's go to Timothy with Christianity Today.
Hi. Thank y'all again for this. So just even, you know, on a personal note too, as an African-American, there's just so much about just in this film that, you know, some people may not even think about. So like, one of the things I think about is when Joe wants 22 to make sure she puts lotion on his body when he gets out the shower, and, and then also in the barbershop, like just how deep 22 is getting, and like those type of conversations actually happen in, you know, in the barbershop. So I was very curious as to how conscionable the decision was having Joe Gardner be an African-American, almost everyday man, and also including those things. Like, when was that decision made that that's who Joe was going to be?
That grew out of bad or good. We didn't set out to make this the first African-American character. It was really out of the decision that this guy who kind of reflects the artist's journey should be a jazz musician, you know. And one of our consultants said, oh, jazz, you could more accurately call black improvisational music, right? It grew out of the African-American culture. And we thought, well, it's only right then to have our main character reflect that. And as soon as we made that decision, I don't think I knew how little I didn't know Or is that the right way of saying it? Anyway, there was a lot that we needed help with. And Kemp Powers, as Dana mentioned, was formative in bringing a lot of those details, the lotion on, those were all things that Kemp brought. But we also had extensive cultural consultants as well. People talking just about the Black experience, people talking about music, and we got to meet and work with Herbie Hancock and Quincy Jones and, you know, these living legends, which was just fascinating and mind-blowing. But it was a huge responsibility that we knew that we wanted to portray this life of this man as accurately as we could, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because the movie gets better. You know, when you talk about those things in an accurate, specific way, strangely, I think it becomes more universal the more specific it is. We had a lot of the benefit of a lot of really great people that helped us. And it was a great learning experience.
Thank you, Timothy. And now to complete our first journey around the round table, Kaylin with Guide.
Thank you. And thank you both for talking with us today. So I was really intrigued by the fact that you said at the beginning of this was how you consulted with people of different faiths to get this idea of, you know, the great beyond in your story. And it seemed to me like a story that has a lot to do with faith. So I was wondering what you feel this movie can teach us about faith, whether that's faith in ourselves, faith in something we don't understand, if that was an important message in this film.
Yeah, I feel like obviously beyond Christianity, I think a major goal of any faith is to try to bring sense for people in their lives. You know, the idea of how do I know what I'm supposed to do? Am I making the right decisions? You know, all those things are complicated, and it's super helpful to have help along the way. I think the message of the film is, you know, I actually feel like it's maybe more of a philosophical film than a theological one. You know, we start with essentialism, the idea that I was born to do this, you know, sort of straight out of Aristotle or Plato. And then we get to counter with the humor of 22 is her nihilism, you know, the sort of ultimate meaninglessness of it all. And I think where we come to in the end is existentialism, you know, like a Soren Kierkegaard kind of thing of, hey, it's not just meant to be localized over here and then the rest of my life happens. You know, all of life is spiritual. Everything you do contributes to who you are as a person and to the overall meaning of your life. And I know I still struggle with that daily, but I feel like having the chance to work on this film was a great reminder daily again, how I can be bringing my full self into everything and being more present in moments where I might otherwise just be like, all right, here's your change, thank you. Or what's for lunch? How much longer is this meeting? You know, really trying to be, and it's tough because you have to balance that with, all right, the movie has to get done. I can't stand here and talk about philosophy all day. But it has made me more grateful, I think, and more appreciative and more desiring of practicing that, because I think that's also something that you don't just, it's not a personality attribute, it's not something you're given in one of these. I think it's a practice, you know, that you have to exercise every day, at least in my case.
I think too that faith and fate are really interconnected, and this year especially, you just have to, for me, I'm not in charge. I have to let go, and I have to trust that my faith and fate, that it'll all work out. And I just feel like that's threaded into the film, but also just the timely of when it's coming out, of trusting in that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Great. Thank you both.
Thank you, Kaylin. And thank you, Pete, for the crash course in philosophy there. We've got about 5 minutes left, so we're not going to be able to probably get back around to everybody, but I'm going to go back to the top and return to Tyler. Tyler, if you have another question.
Sure. Real fast. I think something that people really love about Pixar, what you all do so well, is take these, what can be, and especially in this case, extremely complicated topics and make them go down really, really well. You wouldn't necessarily leave Soul thinking, oh, I just got a crash course in Kierkegaard. So and it was a movie that hinged on the mortality of man and all of our impending deaths. So what is the, so what was the, when you started thinking about this movie, was that a hesitation? Was it like, oh, this might be the one that goes a little too heady for audiences? And how did you find the courage to push through and do it anyway?
That was definitely something that we talked about. Dan and I were worried about, but I think the other thing we learned, in a way, in doing Inside Out was kind of boot camp for this movie, and that was pretty abstract. You know, the idea of anger or fear or whatever, and what we found, this we knew this, but if you make it visual, then everybody gets it. If it's about words, you're going to miss some people. But visually and through action, you know, this character wants this, but this is in the way. Now I can understand everything, you know, and that's takes a long time to do. But we have an amazing group of very talented people who assisted us actually just did all the work. They didn't assist us, nothing. They did the work.
Thanks, Tyler. Jasmine, do you have another question?
Sure. Real quick, I'll ask. I loved the two strong Black women that served as these seemingly like really grounding characters in Joe's life. Did you draw from any real life inspiration for those women?
Yeah. Terry Lynn Carrington, she's an amazing jazz drummer and educator. She was really inspirational for Dorothea. Dorothea is also a lot like Miles Davis, is how we thought of her. And I think the coolest thing about Dorothea is like, there's not many jazz band or band leaders that are women, let alone Black women. And so I think Terry Lynn really helped us in talking about like, she should have this tough exterior and like, you know, but once you get to know her, she's definitely got a softer side. And I think you see that throughout as you watch her character throughout the film.
And Angela Bassett, of course, is the voice, yeah. I think is kind of a guide as well. You know, she's someone like you meet her and you're like, whoa, she's got so much power and strength to her. And yet also, like, you know, we gave her that little speech. It was actually inspired off of this writer, Anthony DeMello, who wrote this little story about a fish looking for the ocean. And as we were doing it, you know, one of our things we do is just kind of, we do it with scratch dialogue, which is just us. It didn't work at all. And we were like, I don't know, this is just going to be clunky and weird. It's supposed to be sort of enigmatic and sort of like a Miles Davis type of thing. She pulled it off. And I don't know that there's a lot of people who could. It's not really actor-proof dialogue.
Thanks again, Jasmine. And we have time for just one last question. I'm so sorry, everybody. But Paul, let's turn to Paul.
Man, that's a lot of pressure.
This better be good.
So one of the things watching Pixar movies, and especially your movies, Pete, that really draws my attention as how deep they get, sort of riffing on what Tyler was saying earlier. They get very deep, but they're still very light and very approachable. And I'm wondering, who do you think of when you're creating these movies? Is it the kids in the audience? Is it the parents in the audience? Or is it even more personal than that? Who are you writing these movies for?
Different people at different times. You know, who is it? Slaughterhouse-Five, Fahrenheit 451 writer. I'm blocking out his name. He said... Yeah, Kurt Vonnegut said, pick somebody and write for them. That's not been my experience. I guess at the beginning, I'm writing more just for myself. Like, ooh, what's fun? Like, what do I want to play with? What are the things that are going to be fun? And then along the way, you know, Dana will say something about her kids, and we're like, oh yeah, we need to write for her kids. So it's almost like building up layers as we go, that I want something just selfishly that is going to excite me and connect with other folks that I talk with, but then I'm also knowledgeable that my kids and Dana's kids and all these, you know, it's different people are going to see it. So it's not really a simple answer, I guess, but it is almost like switching the channel a couple times as we go, sometimes even daily, to make sure we've got something there for everybody.
I think one thing that this film says is that answers are not simple. So Pete, you're not giving a simple answer. Fine. Thank you, everybody, for joining today for the roundtable.
Yes, thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. That was fun.
Yeah. Pete, hey, Dana, thank you for your time.
This is not a round table. We need a new name. We're all
rectangular table.
Yeah, a new Zoom term.
Zoom gallery interview. True. Brady Bunch. That's funny.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Yes, I knew Sister White.
We will not fear.
The king.